This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And welcome back to another episode of the Clear Your Jets podcast. We're your host, Ben Blessington and Michael Nania. A whole week in the books for Jets training camp. There's actual football on tonight with the Hall of Fame game. Michael, the green and white scrimmage this Saturday. And before you know it, the Jets are going to be playing their first preseason game next weekend, 10 days from now. Michael, how excited are you? Football season's just around the corner.
Yeah, I'm just happy that there's going to be weekly events to produce actual stuff for us to react to and talk about, because we're really getting to this point where we're trying to have to manufacture topics and things to discuss. And training camp is great, but it was fun for a few days, but it's kind of getting repetitive. I'm looking forward to actual games to have to analyze.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we did today. We've made a series of questions, and Michael and I are going to predict each one. But that's going to be a little later in the show, Michael. First, let's get to the important stuff. One, Jets signed Josh Johnson, backup quarterback, finally in the building. I guess we'll save him for a little later in the podcast when we do our predictions, but figure we should mention that, as that's probably the only noteworthy piece of news to come out of camp. Obviously, the whole Cameron Clark situation was a scary one, very similar to the Lorenzo Maldon situation a few years ago, week one, I believe it was 2015, where he went down, wasn't moving, very scary situation. Turns out a stinger, so he spent the night in the hospital. Obviously, it sounds like he's going to be okay. So thankfully, everything turned out right with Cam Clark. But outside of that, it's been business as usual. I mean, Jets just having, daily practices, and we get to scout the tweets from the beat writers. Michael, you were actually there on Monday. You put out a great article in Jets X Factor. I recommend everybody check it out, because Michael's got a knack for seeing things that other people don't see. I think that's why you have a bit of a following, Michael, is you just have a very unique eye. You were there on Monday. You were taking studious notes. What were some of your biggest observations from being there at one Jets drive in person?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the comments. That wasn't necessary. But it was really fun to be there in person and just kind of feel the energy of the fan base. As, you know, not only is this an exciting time for the team, but fans are returning after not being able to go to games last year or practices. So
thankfully they weren't able to go to games last year.
Yeah, that was a privilege.
Could you imagine if there were fans during that season with Gase and Darnold and everything?
I would actually be really fascinated to hear what the crowd would sound like in terms of the balance between fans rooting for them to win and fans rooting for them to lose. I actually think that would be really interesting.
It would have been fun
to hear.
It would have been fun during the Raiders game. I think the crowd would be going crazy. And then, it's honestly just better that there were no fans there. Just made things a lot cleaner.
So the fans got saved from themselves last year, yes. but it was a great vibe. It was, about as packed as it could be. The bleachers were full. There were people lined up around the fences. I saw a lot of new jerseys, Vera Tucker. I think more jerseys might be more popular than Wilson jerseys. Maybe it's close, but a lot of new jerseys. Many of them are Chinese, but who can blame them? You could get five of them for like $100, but it was a great.
Yeah, you would know. You would know, Michael.
I would know. I would know. So, of course, I have that information.
There goes our sponsorship.
This is the first practice I've ever been to in person. So it was definitely interesting to just kind of take in the way that it's run and just, not just the you know, the things at the forefront, the 11 on 11 scrimmages and the 7-on-7s and the results of those, not just that, but, you know, taking advantage of, you know, the demeanor of certain players, who's going hard, who's a little more lackadaisical, you know, how the coaches go about their business, who's really hands-on and who takes a step back. So it was really cool to sit back and observe the way that everyone was going about their business, from the players to the coaches, and just what the culture of this team feels like right now. And then from a fan perspective, there's the fans are really into it. We're trying to, you know, at the beginning, they were just cheering for, like, you know, the cornerbacks would catch a pass in a drill and fans would go crazy. Wilson would dump the ball off to Michael Carter. Fans would go crazy. So it was a really cool vibe there. And there was a lot, of stuff that I took away, just in terms of watching these guys in person for the first time. And I think the two biggest takeaways for me are that the hype that we've been hearing surrounding Wilson and Moore, I think, is pretty legitimate. For in terms of Moore, obviously he's been, you know, considered the most dominant player on the field, that he's been standing out, that he looks like a future star. He's been getting all the praise in the world, and it really is legitimate. You could see just when you're watching in person how dominant he has been so far, and it's hard to really do that in 11-on-11s, especially non-padded, which when I was there, pads weren't on yet. But he's doing it in every single fashion, right? A lot of it is against Bryce Hall, and Bryce Hall is a lengthy guy, and he's been covering Moore really tightly, but he's making contested catches against him. His catching technique is great. He uses two hands, attacks the ball. His route running is quick and shifty. He's explosive off of his break. He's doing it all over the field, deep catches, as we've seen the highlight videos shared, short catches. He had this really good whip route against Corey Ballantyne where he broke over the middle and then cut back outside, just toasted him for a touchdown there. So Moore has been great. And then Wilson, even though Wilson hasn't necessarily been dominant necessarily, you know, in training camp in terms of, you know, just racking up highlights,
Saturday was a pretty big highlight.
Yeah, he's had a couple of good highlight practices, a few quiet ones, like the one I was at. He didn't really have too many highlights. Aside from that, essentially, not really no look throw, but a sidearm throw to Moore over the middle. Not a lot of highlights aside from that, but you could just see that, you know, all these things that you've heard from reporters who have been there in terms of his release being compact and quick and the ball just coming out different. All that stuff is really legitimate. Just comparing him and the way the ball comes out when he releases it compared to Mike White and James Morgan, you could tell the difference. And obviously those guys aren't, you know, the best measuring stick, but they are NFL quarterbacks. So it is something that you can take into account. Right. And it's just different. The velocity has a lot of pep to it. The ball comes out of his hands really quickly. His motion is as compact and smooth as, you know, it looks on film and as you've heard from reporters who have been there. So I feel like all that is legitimate. And he practices all those sidearm throws you see him make in games, the different arm angles. He practices that. I saw him off to the side, you know, talking over it with LaFleur, just kind of motioning different ways to release the ball. And then he would practice dump off passes into the flat. He'd throw them sidearm and different unique angles. So that's definitely something he does work on. As natural as it looks, it definitely, he's working on it. It's something that, you know, he's attempting to get good at. So there's a lot of stuff I took away, and I put it all in that article in Jets X Factor, as you mentioned, but it was great to feel the vibe of the fans. And then there's so much you can take away, just little details in terms of what's going on the field.
Yeah. Going to training camp is definitely a goal of mine. It definitely sounds like one of the, for a true fan, it's just an intimate experience, a really cool one. So that's definitely on the bucket list. And yeah, I mean, Wilson, there aren't many quarterbacks that have come out of the draft with a better release than him. I mean, Mahomes is definitely one of them. We shouldn't go through all of them, but it's a short list. I would say he's definitely throws one of the best balls, but just the way that it comes out, it's special for a rookie. I mean, his mechanics as a whole, I mean, that includes his feet. I mean, that was something that constantly plagued Darnold that I don't think you're going to see plague Wilson, was the footwork and the release. Everything is compact. I'll give Darnold credit. His release did get a lot better from his last year at USC to even his rookie year in the NFL, but you saw the big jump. I think it was his second year where his release got a lot more compact. But you're not going to really have many at this point, at least mechanical issues with Wilson. But you know, all that sidearm stuff, that no look stuff, that's all great. And it's, you know, the position is always evolving, and that seems to be the next step of the quarterback position, is all the off platform sidearm, no look stuff. And it's great that the Jets have a guy who's certainly capable of doing it, but like Darnold doing the kind of the same stuff, it has to be rooted. That can't be the basis of your game. Mahomes is able to sit in the pocket and make a throw over the middle without doing all of that. So it's fascinating that he's working on it. Curious to see what the balance of you know, what his regular throws look like, because he does have such a, just a naturally good throwing motion when his feet are set. Just kind of interested to see the balance of the crazy throws versus the routine throws of Wilson, but awesome stuff there. I guess we'll really quickly, we'll go through some week two studs and duds. We should just start off with Carl Lawson. I mean, he was on, I think him and one other person are the only ones we maintained from last week. We tried to mix it up with some new names, but Carl Lawson has just been dominating this training camp. I mean, we'll get a really good measuring stick against the Giants in preseason, depending on how much he plays. An even better one when they're practicing against the Packers that next week. It sounds like he could be in store for a really, really big year. And everybody's just singing his praises. So I guess here's my question with Lawson, because we've talked ad nauseum about how excited we are about him. How excited are you for Lawson versus how concerned should Jets fans be about maybe Mekhi Becton, who's a guy who had a great rookie season last year? Many are expecting to take the next step. Do you think this is, you know, an example where we should be concerned about Mekhi Becton's pass blocking? Or is this something where it's like, look, we know Becton's a good pass blocker. This is just Lawson being great. And this is going to make Becton a better player at the end of the day.
Well, I think it's definitely tough to take away, like have an overall takeaway and how a player is progressing when he's facing the same guy in practice every day, because the matchup is a huge part, especially in this part of the game, pass rushers against linemen. The matchup aspect of it is a huge part of determining how things go. So obviously, based on what we've seen so far, Lawson just isn't a good matchup for Mekhi Becton, and he's not a good matchup for a lot of people. Especially for Becton, though, as a guy who's taller, longer, it's hard for him to get down and block a guy who is, you know, frankly, kind of small for that position and a little bit low to the ground and has a great first step. It's going to be a tough matchup for him. And obviously you'd like him to develop to the point where he can stop guys like that. So when he does face the speedier rushers in the league, he can stop them. But it just seems like Carl Lawson has his number, but it is only going to make him better, I think, even if Becton doesn't catch up and Lawson keeps dominating him day after day throughout the entire offseason. That's not necessarily ideal, but even if it does happen, every rep is just another one that he can learn from and take into the season, just so he can pick up on small tactics and details that can help him against rushers like Lawson and of his caliber when he gets into the season. So Lawson is really good. So it's not necessarily surprising to see him be this dominant, but I guess you would hope that this matchup would be a bit more competitive in terms of, you know, Becton having his moments at times too. But even when I was there, they only had a few legitimate battles where they actually had time to get into it, but Lawson got him a few times when I was there. So that's another thing that has been talked about. And definitely seemed legitimate and warranted when I was there. There was one play where Lawson got him really quickly, just bowled him, and then through a swim move, got inside through the B gap, instant pressure. I saw reports of a play on Wednesday, I believe it was Wednesday, where Lawson was in there so quick that he's just standing next to Zach Wilson. So it's great though to see Lawson playing this well. It's not something you should be mad about. They pay this guy a lot of money to anchor this defense. It's great to see him being this dominant against a guy who is good, a Mekhi Becton, who has already proven he's at least good. So Becton's going to take a lot out of this. Hopefully it's not a sign of things to come. But it's definitely going to be a positive experience for him.
Yeah, there's a few things. One, you kind of noted it, is pads have only been on for one day, and that is a benefit for an offensive lineman. I think if I had to choose, I'd rather have Lawson getting Becton's number than Becton just smothering Lawson all training camp, I guess. I might eat my words in a few months if Becton has a bit of a sophomore slump. We'll see. I don't anticipate that because we saw what he did last year, and I don't want to jinx anything. But I feel as if we know that Mekhi Becton is not a complete bum, and I think that this is an example of one. Lawson is so unique because he's so small. I mean, and this is a benefit to Carl Lawson because I think when I initially was thinking of this training camp battle, I was thinking about Mekhi Becton so much bigger than him. I mean, he's got to be so much stronger than him. He could just be able to smother him. I mean, every rep, he should just be able to smother Carl Lawson. But the difference is that there's just so he can't get his hands on him because Carl Lawson is so much smaller. He has the leverage, but he does such a good job of switching between speed and power. I mean, he has a great get off because he's so, you know, he's a smaller guy, but he's incredibly strong as well. He's just a difficult matchup for Becton, but I think he'd be a difficult matchup for anybody. I really think we're going to see Carl Lawson have a big breakout year because it's going to be more often that Lawson is facing a big offensive tackle. There aren't many. I mean, Becton's a huge offensive tackle, but most offensive tackles are pretty big. There aren't many small defensive ends that are that good as Carl Lawson. So I'm excited to see when the pads come on. I'm excited to see how they both do going up against somebody else. I don't think it's time to sound the alarms on Mekhi Becton. I think I would like to see him have, you know, we've seen Lawson flash plenty that I'm not concerned about him. So I'd like to see Becton maybe have a few bounce back practices. But in the long run, this is going to make him better, not worse. This is going to make Mekhi Becton a better player. He's going to pick up stuff. He's already talked about it. They kind of go back and forth and communicate after each play. And this is going to make him a better player. So, and we already know what he does in the run game. So this is my favorite match of a training camp so far, easily. I guess we'll stick with the studs a little. We'll stick with the positivity because there's not too many duds this week. Positivity in the secondary. You kind of noted this in when you were talking to me about practice, and this is just kind of a symptom of Robert Saleh's zone heavy, coverage heavy scheme, as opposed to the last defensive coordinators and head coach that the Jets have had between Rex Ryan and Todd Bowles and Greg Williams, where it's a blitz heavy man to man defense. Kind of makes you're able to see if corners are absolute bums or not. In this system, it's a lot more cornerback friendly. It's a lot easier to not necessarily stick out like a sore thumb when you have two or three guys covering, you know, 20 yards of grass. It's a lot easier to not get completely burned, although there have been some blown coverages. But Brandon Echols and Bless Austin are two guys that I've heard a lot about this training camp. Bless Austin is in particular has really flashed, and Brandon Echols was even getting some run with the ones today over Bryce Hall, which if you listen to Saleh, it just seems like they were just Echols having a good camp. They just wanted to see how he looked against the ones. But Michael, I guess, what are your thoughts on some of the young guys early, the young corners? Because that seems like that could be the Jets' Achilles heel, not just on defense, but on the whole team. Rex Ryan always used to say that you lose games the fastest between quarterbacks and cornerbacks. But it seems like the Jets, at least, I don't want to – 1 week of training camp, it seems like the corners aren't a complete shit show.
Yeah, definitely when I was there, they were one of the most impressive groups. And it was really a unit-wide effort. And I think what you mentioned in terms of how these cornerbacks are going to play is it really aligns with what I saw when I was there, because it wasn't necessarily the fact that, you know, the defensive back stood out, but it wasn't necessarily in a way where it was like, okay, this guy made a bunch of big plays. This guy had two picks and a pass breakup. There were a couple nice pass breakups. I saw Bryce Hall had one, Justin Hardy had one, but for the most part, it was a quiet offensive day. Zach Wilson didn't really have anywhere to throw the ball, especially in the red zone drills. And it was just a team effort through zone coverage. And that's what zone coverage is. It's communication, it's switching, it's making the right reads and having that camaraderie to shut down as much of the field as possible. And when I was there, they were doing a pretty good job. And most of the great offense we've seen, at least in highlight videos and reports this year, has kind of just been Elijah Moore being great. But other than that, it's kind of been a good training camp for the defense. And the pass rush has, you know, gotten a lot of attention, but secondary's not been as awful as I think we expected it to against right. This really deep wide receiver group. Like you said, Brandon Echols kind of got some first team reps. One of the cornerbacks, the rookies who has flown under the radar, gotten less attention than I think the other rookie corners. Definitely. Bless Austin seems to actually be having a really good camp. He did have a pick in a red zone drill when I was there, although I don't think that one was that impressive because Zach Wilson kind of just threw it up. Nobody was open. And that's another one of my biggest takeaways from being at a practice. Red zone drills, 7-on-7s. Do not put too much stock into those. It's there are some things you can take away from it. It's nice from route running perspective, you know, just one receiver versus one corner or tight end. Then the quarterback in terms of the timing and accuracy of their throws, you know, in short range, but there's no pass rush, there's no O-line. And a lot of the interceptions you hear about, like the one that Wilson threw on Monday when I was there, is kind of just the quarterback rolling out and throwing the ball up just because it's a practice. So why not? That's what kind of it clearly looked like that was his mentality on that one. So 7-on-7s just aren't real football. So yeah, it's kind of hard to take anything away from that. But Buzz Austin, even in the 11-on-11s, has been making some plays. It seems like I've not heard about him getting beat too much. I know I didn't see him getting beat when I was there. Eccles definitely was covering pretty well. Carter, it seems like the slot guys have covered pretty well. Berrios has made some plays and Crowder, but for the most part, it seems like they've done a solid job. So the less you're hearing about the cornerbacks at this point, the better.
Yeah.
So, and it's been pretty quiet for them. So they're doing a nice job so far, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to put too much stock into it. I mean, it's been a week of training camp. It's a rookie quarterback. Generally, training camp practices, especially when you're installing a completely new offense and defense, are going to favor the defense, especially in this scheme. It seems like the defense is a little bit more, allows the players to just play, and the offense is a little bit more of the mental side of things. So you can't read too much into it, but I will say, unlike other years where you can say, well, look who they're covering, wait until they cover an elite unit. Not that the Jets are really an elite unit, but they're a damn good receiving core top to bottom. I mean, they're one of the deepest receiving cores out there. Corey Davis is a very good veteran receiver, and Elijah Moore has been playing like a star in training camp. So no, they're not a top five unit yet, but they're definitely not a bad there. I would say, I would go as far to say they're a good receiving unit. So I think it is a good measuring stick for them. But at the end of the day, as many hair pulling moments, this unit is going to induce, I think it'll be a fun unit to watch grow throughout the season under this coaching staff. Another stud, a young guy that we've had on the show before, friend of the podcast, Bryce Huff, who, if you listen to the reports, became a favorite of last year's coaching staff and has become a favorite of this year's coaching staff. And with the injury to Vinnie Curry, who seemed to be maybe the favorite for third down, five tech edge rusher, guy who could come in and passing situations, seems like he's really stepped up and he's getting a lot of reps with the ones. He's put Morgan Moses in a blender a few times. Bryce Huff seems to be a guy who's not necessarily coming out of nowhere because he had a very good rookie season especially for an undrafted rookie. But a guy who's certainly impressing and may have been on the camp, but definitely would have been a potential roster cut if he wasn't having this good of a camp.
Yeah, Bryce Huff is definitely, it seems like he is having almost as productive of a pass rushing training camp as Lawson is, probably not to the same extent, but he's, you know, showing out a lot too. And also in terms of the pass protection, Morgan Moses, he's kind of been taking some losses as well. And it's training camp. We're not overly criticizing either of these.
It's
guys,
all we have. We mentioned
it's all we have. We said at the beginning of this, we're waiting for the real games. But, you know, Moses has actually taken some losses as well. I saw a few from him when I was there, and in some of the camp highlight videos we've seen, he's gotten beat. And Huff has given him some of those. So it's been impressive to see him playing well to start out. And he could be an opening week starter because Vinnie Curry is going to miss the first game. So Huff could have a chance to establish himself. And with Vinnie Curry out through the preseason, Huff could really have a chance to make a claim to even keep a starting role once Curry comes back. So promising to see him playing well to start.
Absolutely. I mean, this defensive line is certainly the strength of the team. And they've certainly gotten the better of the Jets offensive line when it comes to pass blocking, which we're about to talk about in a second. But one more stud, I guess I would say the run blocking as a whole has looked pretty good. And obviously this is a run blocking favoring unit with this wide zone scheme. Joe Douglas has done a good job of bringing in players who really fit that scheme. But it seems like the running backs have had a lot of success. And while this defensive line is certainly dominating in the passing game, seems like the offensive line is holding its own, if not doing well in the run blocking game.
Yeah, it does seem like that. The run game, when I was there,
And it's hard to the run game is really hard to judge in practice
with no pads. Because
with no pads, there's just limited contact. Guys just bounce off of tackles.
You can kind of judge how well a guy gets out in space, the concepts they're running, the running backs themselves. It seems like Tevin Coleman had a good day. All the running backs seem to have flashed, and a lot of that does seem to be that there's more holes in the run game. So there's not too much. I get what you're trying to say, but there's minor stuff to take away.
Right. I think you're right about that. It's the second level where things kind of get, you know, nonsensical and there's nothing going
Nobody's
on.
Nobody's trying to tackle.
But at the first level, kind of just, you know, first step, can the O-line hit their blocks? And also just looking at the kind of scheme they're running, you can take a good amount away from that. And they were pretty consistently getting chunk gains when I was there. There were a few stuffs. Fadakasi had one, Lawson, and I believe Huff had one too. But for the most part, they were picking up chunk gains pretty consistently. I thought Ty Johnson and Tevin Coleman looked the best when I was there. Carter didn't have the best day, or P. Ryan, but Carter has had some good days throughout training camp. So I do think the run blocking has been pretty solid. It does look like this is going to be the heavy wide zone offense that we've been talking about. They were relying on that a ton in the 11-11s that I was watching. That's definitely going to be the basis of this offense. And everyone looked really explosive getting off the ball. They seemed to have pretty good sync, getting laterally, passing off blocks and everything. So it definitely has been a positive so far, even if the pass blocking hasn't been great.
Yeah, welcome to the 21st century, because I think there's, and we talked about this before, but it's a passing league, but you got to be able to run the football. And it's not just running the football right up the A-gap with Frank Gore for 2 yards and a cloud of dust. It's, you know, being able to spread the defense out with motion, being able to capitalize with play action and hit guys over the top with crowded boxes. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that this wide zone offense attacks defenses and makes them defend multiple things. It kind of seems like there's always a weak spot. If you're able to run the football effectively, there's always going to be something offensively. And if you have an arm to take advantage of it, especially a guy like Zach Wilson, who seems like such a perfect scheme fit, it's exciting. But things have to come together up front for this team first. And that's why maybe there's a little bit of a concern in the pass blocking sense of things. It's the classic training camp conundrum. Is our offense bad or is our defense good? And the defensive line is murdering the Jets offensive line when it comes to pass blocking. Again, no pads, but protecting the rookie quarterback seems to have been priority number one for Joe Douglas. And I think he's done a damn good job of doing that in this offseason, but 1 week of training camp, granted, seems like Zach Wilson could be the victim of some brutal hits this season if this offensive line doesn't shore up. Talking about a dud here, Michael, I guess, what is your reaction to pass blocking not being as sharp so far in training camp?
I think this is something that could take time, as much as, if not more so, any other position group on the team. Because a big part of pass protection is just camaraderie and communication. And there are some new pieces on there. You have a rookie in AVT, and you have Morgan Moses just coming.
By the way, we haven't heard anything about AVT, which I take as a fantastic sign, because it was a similar thing.
Exactly. And there's no Quinnen Williams out there, so that definitely has lightened the competition. But Sheldon Rankins is out there, and I've seen Rankins dominate.
Wait, can we pause? I forgot there's no Quinnen Williams out there. I mean, obviously I knew that, but this offensive line's in trouble when Quinnen gets out. I mean, that is just a sneak peek of how good this defensive line could be. The fact that they're doing all this without their best player.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of AVT, Quinnen's going to be the guy he's going up against. Quinnen usually plays on that right side of the D-line against the left guard. So that'll be his matchup. But AVT, we haven't heard anything about this guy. That's fantastic. Because I've seen Rankins make noise against the right guards. I've seen him beat Van Roten and make a few other plays. Fadakasi, Franklin Myers, a lot of guys are making plays. A lot of linemen are getting beat. Haven't heard anything about AVT. So that is a good point on your part. But I think it can take time to build that chemistry and camaraderie. Whereas with the defensive line, I think, you know, there is a little bit of that running stunts and things like that. But for the most part, that's not really an important part of it. Whereas the offensive line does need to really develop that and work on it. And also with the quarterback is involved in that. So I think more so than any other position can take time. Also the pads you know, they just put him on, and it seems like the defensive line still dominated the first couple of days with the pads on, but that's definitely an edge for the defensive line. I wouldn't be too concerned with that at this point, but you know, as it drags on, does become a little bit more right. of a concern gradually, but we'll see what happens in the preseason. That will right. obviously be a lot more important than the training camp.
And another dud, and this is partly due to his practice, but also the signing of Josh Johnson, Mike White, who at this point is probably just playing for a spot on the practice squad, barring an amazing preseason where he has to be QB2. We'll talk about this a little later in the podcast, but it seems like his roster spot is probably out the window, because unless they're going to cut James Morgan, or unless he really balls out and they don't want to keep a veteran, with Johnson in the building, just doesn't really seem like there's space for him. And like you said, it seems like, although Mike White may have been the better of the two at the start of camp, that Morgan has caught up to him a little bit. They both aren't, you know, starting quarterbacks in this league at this point, but it seems like Morgan has had a little bit more of the flashes than Mike White.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Morgan has been up and down. He's definitely had some bad plays, but I do see every now and then he makes some really nice throws. Whereas White doesn't really, White kind of has the same downs that Morgan has, but I don't see the same flashes.
How'd they look when you saw him in person?
Yeah, I think that kind of is what I saw when I was there. Morgan had, he hit Elijah Moore on a curl route over the middle, a deep one, probably like 20 yards. That's pretty impressive. And for the most part, like, I think his on straight line, like, he doesn't have a ton of touch, and he forced some throws that he probably shouldn't have, but straight line throws, I think he has pretty decent velocity, and he has the confidence to try and hit tight windows. He's from Green Bay, so he's got that Brett Favre in him and that Aaron Rodgers. So he's definitely confident enough to try those throws. I think he has the arm strength to fit into tight windows. I'm not sure about his decision making, obviously, at this point, and I don't know about his touch, but straight line accuracy, there is a little bit there with him. So and then Mike White, just there isn't much that stands out with him really in a positive way, and he has kind of the same decision making issues. Morgan also had a pretty big run at the practice I went to, a legitimate one. He did scramble.
How'd he look with the bum knee?
He looked fine to me. Like I was going to say, on this run, he was able to evade a tackler, and probably even in a real game would have gotten 25 yards at least. So
if you had to clock him with your eyes, how fast would you say his 40 is?
I think, at least from what I saw, I think his speed isn't as bad as you would probably think it was. He has a reputation as like pocket passer, immobile, and he is fairly immobile, but at least from what I saw on that one run, I think his speed is not that bad. I'd go with a 4.9. Is his 40 time out there? That would probably be what I'd go with. I'd go with 4.9.
You're in a 4.89, which is honestly,
oh, let's go,
faster than I thought he would have run.
That's not bad for,
well, I know he played with a giant knee brace in college, and that's pretty much the only clips we've seen, so he may be a better athlete than we're giving him credit for, but it's hard to look, you know, agile and athletic in that giant knee brace. But I guess that'll wrap. We do have one more dud, but I kind of want to blend it with our next segment, which is our predictions for this year. Not the basic predictions that everybody makes, how many wins are they going to have and how many yards Zach Wilson going to throw for. Not because we're better than that, but because we beat that horse to death like 3 months ago. So we have a new set of predictions to go over here. But we'll blend it in with our next bit of with our next dud, who I guess I would say would be Denzel Mims, but I'm not necessarily calling Denzel Mims a dud, just his training camp so far. He's been running with the threes. Vincent Smith has been getting run over him. People have been concerned about Denzel Mims. We've talked about, hey, look, he was always going to be raw. Of course, we'd like him to be running with the ones more. He's made some plays, but he's going to get his opportunity, which I think lends itself nicely into this question. And Michael, I guess you can talk a little bit about Mims's training camp, in the guise of this question, but which 2020 rookie do you think makes the biggest leap and the biggest impact this season out of Denzel Mims, Ashton Davis, Jabari Zuniga, and LaMichael Perine?
Well, first of all, with Mims, I do think it is fair to start, you know, being a little critical of him and a little bit concerned, because we are in the midst of the second week of training camp, and he is not with the first team routinely. He, you know, gets a few reps with the first team, but has mainly been with the second and third team. Vincent Smith is starting to get prioritized over him a little bit. And, you know, I don't think the coaching staff wants that or the front office wants that. It seems like that's just what Mims earned to this point. And it is interesting because I don't think on the field he's been, you know, terrible. When I was there, he had a really good sideline catch from Wilson. We've heard about and seen a few videos of him making some nice plays, and I haven't heard really of it unless I'm forgetting them, because I can't just remember every single tweet about training camp, but I don't remember hearing much about him dropping passes. I did see him get blanketed
in the beginning. In the beginning, he had a few.
Yeah, but you know, nothing that's been awful. And I did see him get blanketed on a few routes, but everyone does now and then. Like Corey Davis hasn't been amazing in training camp, and I saw him, you know, get covered up pretty well a couple of times. So I don't think his on field has been awful. So there could be something more to it that we don't really know about, whether it's, you know, just recall or, you know, the way he understands the scheme and the film, or maybe it's just demeanor or something in that area, the, you know, the effort, the work ethic part of it, maybe it's something like that. So it's tough to know, but I think, you know, with a good preseason, with a good performance in the scrimmages against the Eagles and the Packers, that should be able to outweigh what's going on the practice field. I think the battle is close enough, and he has enough of a pedigree in terms of being a second round pick and showing promise last year, that if he's able to make plays on a bigger stage against another team, then he should be able to quickly make up ground. But it's fair to be a little bit concerned. But in terms of this question, which 2020 rookie will make the biggest leap this season? Well, it's kind of a lot of these guys are not in the most promising spot, from Zuniga, who hasn't made a ton of noise. And, you know, Bryce Huff is kind of outplaying him to this point. Michael P. Ryan's kind of buried behind Carter, Coleman, even Johnson, Denzel Mims. I've just talked about him. Ashton Davis isn't going to be on the field at all this offseason, it seems like. So these guys are in a tough spot. But between these four, man, that's tough. I'm going to roll with Mims. I'm still confident that he's going to figure it out and that he's going to get not a huge role, but I think he can establish himself as the third receiver and make some big plays throughout the season, even if he's not targeted frequently, score some touchdowns, get a few big plays, both through the contested catches and his yak over the middle.
Right.
I think he is going to figure it out, but it's definitely up in the air. I'm just mainly picking him because these other three guys don't really have much of anything going for them.
Still much confidence. Yeah, I think making the biggest leap and the biggest impact are two different questions. So I do that a lot where I lump two different questions into the same thing, because biggest leap, I mean, look, if Jabari Zuniga gets one sack, then that's the biggest leap because he did nothing last year. Yeah. But I guess I'll kind of blend the two, leap and impact equals answer. I would say I like the Mims answer for sure. Out of the four of them, I definitely believe in him the most. Long-term, I think he has the best career. I'm not going to say Zuniga because I think it's too crowded of a defensive line room. I do think he carves out a role for himself at some point during the season. I do think he can be a backup in this unit, but I just think there's too many good rushers ahead of him. But all it takes is, you know, one injury to Carl Lawson, and then all of a sudden with Vinnie Curry out, now Bryce Huff's a starter, and then he could get some more playing time. Davis, I'm very tempted to, because although he's not playing right now, I like his potential a lot. He was a guy the Jets were really high on. I think he's a good fit in the scheme. There's obviously question marks with Marcus May, so I think they're going to be eager to play Davis. I don't love LaMarcus Joyner as much as you, Michael. He may come up in a later question. And I like his impact on special teams. So you went with Mims, so I'll change my. I'll go with Ashton Davis. However, Michael P. Ryan should not be completely ignored here, because I know you're not a huge fan of him. I'm not a huge fan of him, but he has made some plays in training camp, and he is the Jets' power back. So there's a chance that he could carve himself out a role in the goal line. But biggest leap and impact, I'm going to say Davis. I'm going to say Davis upsets or takes LaMarcus Joyner's spot before the end of the year, and he makes an impact on special teams as well. Why not? Why not be different?
That's a fair prediction. It could definitely play out that
way. I don't know how much I believe in it versus how much I want to be different than you, but I think that's what I'm hoping for Ashton Davis, at least. I think out of the three of those guys, excluding Mims, he has the best chance because, look, the Jets had a first-round grade on him, reportedly. So more TDs, Corey Davis or Elijah Moore?
I'm going to go with Corey Davis. I kind of feel like Moore isn't going to be a big touchdown guy this year. He absolutely could be. He definitely could be because he is capable of scoring in a lot of different ways, but I do think that he's going to – I think he'll rack – I do see him getting 1,000 yards this year, but I feel like he'll probably score 4 or 5 touchdowns, whereas I can see Davis getting maybe 6, 7, maybe 8. I just feel like Zach Wilson, based on what we saw in college, kind of in the red zone is going to value the big bodies specifically. He loved the tight end, Isaac Rex specifically. Last year had 12 touchdowns, but that's not really the strength of this team. And more so you get that size and contested catchability in the receivers, Davis and Mims. I think that's another reason Mims will step up. But I think Davis is going to score a lot of touchdowns this year. He has not been a touchdown scorer in his career for the most part. 5 is his career high, but I think he's going to beat that this year and lead this team in touchdowns.
I think he'll definitely match that. I'm going to go with Elijah Moore. I'm buying in on the hype. I think he's a smart person to buy into, and I just think Elijah Moore is going to have a number of deep touchdowns. This is also a pretty vague question, but if you're including total touchdowns, I think the Jets are going to have a lot of fun using Elijah Moore in motion. You can use him on orbits. You can use him just handing the ball off to him. You can put him in motion and throw it to him. The Chan Gailey used to have a great play with Brandon Marshall that the Jets would get free points. Where they would just put him in motion and snap the ball and throw it to him right on the goal line. If you're on the 2-yard line, it's an easy, 6 points. And because of Elijah Moore's route running, I just think he's not the bigger guy. And I think that's a smart point. Zach Wilson loved those bigger body possession receivers and capitalizing on his accuracy. I just think Elijah Moore is going to rack up touchdowns this year. He's going to rack up big plays. And I think Corey Davis is going to be a very reliable receiver for Zach Wilson, but I just see him doing more of his work in between the 20s. I just think he's going to be a guy who can pick up some chunk yards in that intermediate game, pick up first downs for you, and be maybe more reliable and whatnot on third down, draw some defensive attention, be a great run blocker. He's going to be a great, important player for the Jets. I just think Elijah Moore is going to get more of the shine, whereas maybe Corey Davis is more of the dirty work on this offense. More touchdowns between the tight ends. You mentioned how much Zach Wilson loves his tight ends. Chris Herndon or Tyler Kroft?
I think Herndon's going to score more than Kroft. I mean, Kroft can get his share of touchdowns. He had a 7 touchdown season in 2017. He had 3 last year in only 10 games and 16 targets. So he can get some red zone touchdowns. And Herndon obviously had a bad year last year, but I feel like Herndon will be, I think, and we talked about this a lot, but I think they'll be similar in snaps, but Herndon should significantly out target him. So I think Herndon will score more than him.
I agree with you there. I think that Kroft is the better run blocker. I think the only reason this is a question is because Kroft is – they're probably going to split their times quite equally. You made the great point that because the Jets are so wide receiver heavy, they're going to have to go 11 personnel more. You're going to want the better blocking tight end there, so you still have some running versatility. So Kroft is going to get some rub. But Herndon, particularly in the goal line, I think he's actually going to have some success there. This season, more total touchdowns looking at the running back. So receiving and rushing, Michael Carter or Tevin Coleman.
I'm going to go with Carter because I feel like Coleman he's not a goal line guy. So, and I think Carter necessarily, it's not his greatest strength either. And the Michael Pirin might take on that role or maybe even Ty Johnson. But I think Carter will have a more balanced carry distribution, whereas Coleman will be, your receiving guy, probably third down, third and long situations, whereas Carter might get more opportunities near the goal line and might hit more home runs and score more touchdowns. And even though Coleman's a good receiver, he doesn't really score a lot as a receiver. He did have a 5 touchdown season a couple years ago, but only 1 touchdown with the Niners in 2019 and 0 in 2020. So I'm going to go with Carter here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Coleman will have ultimately more receptions than Carter, but down on the goal line, I don't think Coleman gets that many reps there. I think Coleman's touchdowns are going to be on, you know, if the Jets are on the 25 yard, you know, inside the opponent's territory on the 25, 30 yard line, somewhere around there. And he gets a screen or he gets a pitch or an outside run and he can break it. That's where his touchdowns are going to come. I just don't really see him being a goal line threat for the Jets. And I think Michael Carter might get some of those reps. More sacks, Carl Lawson versus the field. Is it Carl Lawson or anybody else in this defensive Jets defensive line between Quinton Williams, John Franklin Myers, Sheldon Rankins, etc., get more sacks than Carl Lawson?
I really feel like Lawson's going to break out with the sacks this year. Obviously, we know the whole story that he's not a sack guy, hasn't been to this point, but he did not have any help in Cincinnati to set him up with sacks because, you know, he did his thing. He won his matchups. That's all he can do. That's all you can judge him on. But if you're going to get sacks, you need things around you to be working. You need good coverage. You need the guys around you to win. So, you know, which he might not get with the Jets,
but he will
have guys around him winning to, you know, force the quarterback to scramble out to the edge, to force the quarterback to step up into him. So he's going to have a lot more help than he did in Cincinnati. So I think he will. And he's just overdue. A lot of it is luck in terms of sacks. It really is. And he's just way overdue to have some of these pressures turn into sacks. So I feel like he's going to have a huge year and lead them in sacks. But Quinton's a great candidate. I think Franklin Myers is an underrated possible, you know, a guy who could possibly compete for it, even though he didn't have a ton of sacks last year. That's probably it in terms of the guys who could lead the team, but I'm going to go with Lawson.
I think the only chance anybody has is if Lawson either gets hurt or draws a lot of double teams, but I think Lawson's going to have a big double digit sack season, and I just don't see anybody else approaching that. Maybe Quinton gets close, but there's just so many mouths to feed that I think there's going to be a lot of sacks in this unit, but there can't, not everybody can have double digits on this line. And I think Lawson might be the only one. I think a number of guys might get 7 or 8 or 9, but I think Lawson could have 12, 13, 14. I mean, I think he's going to be in that range. So I'll take Carl Lawson there. More sacks, the wily veteran Vinny Curry or the young pup Bryce Huff?
This is an interesting one. Two guys will probably be playing rotational role. I'm going to go with Bryce Huff. I think that as good as Vinny Curry is at creating pressure, I've talked about it a lot. I think he's not really – I think Curry's an example of a guy who doesn't get a lot of sacks because he really isn't a sack guy. Different than Lawson, who I think has kind of been unlucky, hasn't had a lot of help, isn't actually bad at finishing sacks. I think Curry isn't bad at finishing sacks, but it's more so he's a bull rusher. He squeezes the pocket. That's how he creates his pressure. And that's not really a great way to produce sacks because, you know, he's squeezing the pocket, affecting the game, but, you know, he's not totally disengaging his blocker. So that's why he doesn't get a ton of sacks. He usually gets 3 a year, pretty much on average. So I don't think he'll be a huge sack guy. Whereas Huff, I think Huff has, you know, sack tools. He has the speed and explosion to get around the edge, bend the corner, get some sacks. He had 2 last year. And he didn't play a ton of snaps. So I'm going to go with Huff. I think he has the kind of tool to be a sack artist sort of rusher.
Yeah. I don't know about, I get what you mean. I don't think.
Right. I'm not saying he'll get 10 sacks, he can get 4 or 5.
Right. I think Huff gets about 4 or 5. I mean, the fact that he got 2 last year and he didn't play as much, I think he's going to get, between 3 to 5. And I think Curry probably gets 2 to 3. So I'll take Huff. Also friend of the podcast. How could I not? More interceptions, Marcus May or the field?
Well, first, and this is something I said to you before, maybe you can restart this argument with me right now, but you were saying he's, you know, a notorious ball
words in my mouth. I didn't say notorious. I said he's a bit of a ball hawk.
Okay. Well, I
saw
agree
the interception
with
against Seattle. You saw the butt pick. You saw he had a few picks his rookie year. I mean, he had the 99-yard return in 2018. I mean, Marcus May has a knack for football. I mean, he's not Brian Dawkins, but I mean,
and I do
versus anybody else in this defense, he has to be the favorite.
I do agree with that, but a lot of them are pass deflections. He's great at getting pass deflections. I posted a lot of numbers about it. In terms of interceptions, he's good. but you know, he's not amazing. Six right, interceptions so Marcus in 4 years. And his career highs too, which he had last year, tied this rookie year.
Well, 2018 he missed a lot of games.
Okay, but he still has 6 interceptions in 54 games, which isn't amazing. But he's good. He's good. But in terms of Marcus May or the field, I'm going to go with the field. I think there's going to be a random guy this year that
Marcus kind Williams of pops type out. Season.
Marcus Williams type season, a random cornerback who gets a few interceptions. Maybe not even random. Maybe Bryce Huff just – no, Bryce Hall
Bryce Huff.
Comes through. Maybe Bryce Huff leads the team interceptions. That would definitely be something. But, you know, no, maybe Bryce Hall does as part of – Bryce Hall doesn't seem like he'll be a big interception guy to me, but you know, maybe he does – come through and get a few. Maybe the guy in the slot, guarded second, or Guidry, maybe Joyner gets a few. I'm going to go with the field just because I like Marcus May a lot. I think he is a ball hawk in the sense that he finds the ball, makes plays on it, but he's not a huge interception guy. So I think someone will be able to get more than his usual one or two this season.
I think the argument against May is that he's going to be playing a little bit more in the box and less of the center field. And I could definitely see, you know, a corner like a Hall or an Austin or even a Pinnock or Michael Carter. I think this is a tough question, but I'm going with Marcus May. I'm going with the vet here. I think it's only
his fifth season.
Not this argument. He's definitely a vet, Michael. You can't be a team captain and then you're in your fifth season in the league. The average career is like 3 years. Regardless, he's on a second contract to an extent because it's not his franchise tag. So, regardless, I think I'm going to go with Marcus May here, but it wouldn't be the most shocking.
How many do you think he'll get?
3. Give him 3. I think it's a fair guess.
Okay. If he can do that, I think that should lead the team.
I think 3. I mean, because I the thing is I think I get what you're saying. It's not actually a random guy. I just think. Kind of similar to the defensive line. There's a lot of, I don't want to say there's a lot of mouths to feed. I just think there's going to be, I think the Jets defense will force some turnovers. They're not necessarily a huge turnover defense, but the turnovers they do force, I feel like they're going to be spread out. I don't think there's going to be necessarily one guy to dominate. And I think the only guy who really is going to have his name called repeatedly is going to be Marcus May. So,
who's an underrated candidate who I forgot about is CJ Mosley.
Mosley is a definite candidate with the drop weight. Can be playing a lot more coverage. Certainly a smart linebacker. I could definitely see him getting 2 or 3 interceptions as well. Maybe even 4. Who knows? But I'll stick with
four is his career high. He had 4 in 2016. So
I'll stick with May, but Mosley in the drop down weight in this role is certainly an option. All right. One positive surprise has to be out of nowhere. You know, I'm trying to think of recent examples. Robbie Anderson in his rookie year is kind of an example. Somebody just kind of out.
John Franklin Myers.
John Franklin Myers last year, friend of the podcast. There's kind of always somebody every year that is not really talked about that much. Maybe he's talked about in this podcast, but outside of that, nobody really talks about him. And then boom, big season gets some recognition among the fan base, becomes a fan favorite. Who is that player going to be this year?
I'm looking around the roster, looking at the depth chart right now.
We've talked about everybody, so this is kind of hard. So
see which name pops out to me as someone who could do this. It's so hard to pick because what makes them surprising is the fact that you wouldn't talk about them in this very situation right now. So, all right, here's a name that pops out to me, and it would have to require some injuries for him to get his opportunity, but Sherrod Neesman. How about that?
That's safety. That's
the point.
Yeah, but I meant like they're going to get fan recognition. They're going to make a few special teams tackles.
That's
like,
not what I'm saying. I'm saying that he'll start at safety. There will be some injuries.
You know what? Go ahead.
And he'll make some plays. That's the point.
Okay, go ahead. Make your stride. I'm going to give you somebody who's
all right. Mekhi Becton. There's my surprise.
No. Like – Bryce Huff is
that's not surprising.
Answer.
That's not acceptable.
That is acceptable. Michael, not everybody talks about Bryce Huff as much as we do on this podcast. You're right. It was a confusing question. I meant that most Jets fans aren't talking about the Bryce Huff breakout season. Who's going to be that guy? We were talking about John Franklin Myers on this podcast. in 2019 and he didn't even play a single game. So there's, you can make your Sherrod Neesman argument. I think there's a maybe a broader pool of candidates than you were pulling from. But if Neesman is still your answer, feel free to make your case.
I'm there's probably a better answer. All right, go ahead. Say your guy. Like, I'll try to come up with someone else. Sherrod Neesman, though. Look out for him.
You know, I'm thinking Elijah Moore. No, I'm thinking it's going to be somebody in the cornerback room, I think. I think somebody in this cornerback room is going to step up as a long-term starter. I mean, that's honestly all you're hoping is at least one guy in this unit steps up. It's like, okay, he's a long-term starter for us. I think Bryce Hall is definitely the favorite, but because he's being relied upon as cornerback number one, I don't think we can say use him for this answer. Bless Austin, the way he's been playing in training camp, I almost want to say him. I like Pinnock. I mean, that's kind of your answer in a way because you've been pretty high on him. But I kind of like I'm torn between him and Echols. I like that the last 2 years there's been kind of, to a lesser extent, but like Bryce Hall last year, Bless Austin the year before, just kind of a random late round pick, not necessarily random, a late round pick that gets some run at corner, especially in this scheme. I just think there's going to be somebody in this scheme that's really going to thrive. I'm stuck. I'll go with Pinnock just for clarity, but I wouldn't be surprising with Echols or maybe somebody in the slot. I just think that it's going to be at that cornerback position where we're going to have somebody that is a fan favorite.
Okay, I actually have a pretty solid one, I think.
Go ahead.
I'm going to go with Ronald Blair. How's that?
All right, good, yeah.
So he's a Robert Saleh favorite. We've heard the quotes about how he was one of Saleh's favorite players in San Francisco. And in 2019, the last time he played, he was putting up one of his most efficient seasons in terms of pressures and run stops before he got hurt. So I could see him emerging as maybe that second starting edge at some point, overtaking Curry and Huff and making a lot of plays, not necessarily passing game, but being a really big time run defender. So right. That's something I could see happening.
Yeah. I'm out of those corners. Who do you think is the biggest likely, including Hall, including Austin? I mean, who is that guy you think that's going to really establish themselves as the fan favorite at the spot? I think the candidates are, I mean, obviously we know him, but Hall, Austin, Echols, Pinnock, Mike Carter, the second. Out of those five, who do you think really shines this year?
I believe in Hall. I think he's going to have a good season. Just
maybe knock him out because I think he's cornerback one. So he's the obvious answer to me. So sorry, re-ask the question without Hall. Who do you think steps up as cornerback two?
I'm going to roll with Pinnock. I think there will be growing pains, but I feel like he is a tailor-made fit,
right? Exactly.
Defense.
He's such a good scheme fit, especially with that press bail. He's used to cover three. I mean, I don't know. He looks good in the number 41. I'll stick with Pinnock. Who, on the flip side of that, who's going to be one massive letdown? Somebody that everybody's talking about, really excited about, and is just not good this season. And even though, like, I want to broaden the horizons because I think you were a little too narrow focused. It maybe doesn't have to be somebody everybody's talking about, but maybe somebody that people are relying on or maybe assuming is better than they're going to be. Who do you think is going to be let down this season?
It's always tough to make this pick because, you know, as an optimist, which I feel like I'm pretty optimistic, you try to see the positive in every single player and project how things could go. If
it never works like that.
If things break positively, but it never works like that. At least half of the players that we've spoken positively about on this podcast are not going to live up to those expectations. It just always works out that way. Even if you're a good team, every single player does not have a positive season. So it's tough to pick who is actually going to not do it. You kind of have to go with your gut a little bit, but I'm going to... I have one that kind of comes to mind right now. I don't think people are going to like it, but it's hard to pick one that people would like. But I'll go with Morgan Moses.
Yeah.
I think if he ends up starting, and especially in pass protection, I feel
like he's going to be calling for George Fant.
Going to be calling for George Fant and his athleticism. But I think the biggest thing with Moses, why he could fit this category, is that he's more He's more of a run blocker than a pass blocker, so he can make some big mistakes in pass protection that'll stand out, giving up some sacks. He's given up 5 sacks pretty much each of the few recent seasons, which is a high number. And his pass protection is usually below average. So I'll go with him, but there are some pretty good candidates for this. If you're just willing to,
right,
you know, put it out there that you actually think
who are some of the bold ones? Like, if maybe just mute your Twitter. if you didn't care. Okay. Maybe because a lot of times, especially in this segment, we've maybe floated out potential scenarios that maybe we don't fully back. And I think you're maybe scared to put out something to say that this guy might not come through because people are going to perceive it as you fully believing that. You know what I mean? Like, as you said, we're optimists. Yeah. So sometimes we put out some optimistic scenario. Like I did it earlier with Ashton Davis, a potential optimistic scenario. If you had a gun to my head, I'm not going to say that's going to be how Ashton Davis' season turns out, but it's a scenario. I like his potential. Who maybe has a negative potential that you could scenarios you could see potentially happening in this for this team? Because this is a hypothetical question.
Well, there is one guy that comes to mind first. Then looking at the depth chart, Corey Davis. I think there is a chance that he doesn't necessarily.
How dare you?
That he doesn't necessarily live up to the contract and has I don't think there's any way Davis can be bad. I think I want to put that up there. Because I'm putting the negativity out there like you requested. I don't think there's any way he could be bad because he doesn't drop a lot of passes. He's good in contested catch situations, but I could see him falling well short of the numbers he put up last year, kind of just being an okay starter, and which isn't necessarily what you want at the price he's getting. And there's a big reason why. I saw these very interesting numbers about how wide receivers across the league performed based on the personnel they were running. And a big part of the reason Davis was so efficient last year is that he did not have a lot of competition for targets. Obviously he was playing with AJ Brown, but beyond that, he had pretty much nobody to compete with. The Titans ran a lot of 12 personnel with only 2 wide receivers on the field, him and Brown. So that really pumps up a wide receiver's production. And he benefited a lot from that. And when the Titans didn't run 12 personnel, his production was kind of below average. So that is something to worry about, especially as the Jets.
I'm liking the negativity.
Go into an 11 personnel offense. Just something to keep an eye on.
A little bit more balanced.
I'd keep an eye on that. I think Corey Davis will be good. I said before he'll lead them in touchdowns, but we're being honest now.
All right, enough of you. I have one that I do firmly back. I actually think the Morgan Moses one in pass protection is going to be accurate. I think he's good in run blocking, but I think the pass protection may be a bit of a weakness for him. So I think the Jets will probably be looking to replace him next year. So I agree with that one. I think LaMarcus Joyner is going to be bad next year. I know you're kind of a big Joyner guy. I don't know exactly why I get this feeling. I've seen a few busted plays in training camp, but that's not really the basis of it. It's just more that I don't, the positive side of me is trying to think that Ashton Davis overtakes him, but I just think that Joyner is going to be on the end of a few long touchdowns. I kind of get maybe a similar feeling, but a different vibe from Michael Carter II in the slot. I feel like I think it's going to be the case with a lot of these young corners that they're going to give up some mind-numbingly dumb coverage busts where it's just like wide open 60-yard TDs every once in a while. I think that's just the risk you play when you have this young of a secondary. I think Joyner and Moses are the two best picks. The one guy that I couldn't actually decide, and I have one, like you gave, like a brave take that you're not fully backing, just a potential hypothetical. I'll get to that in a second. But the one guy I couldn't decide between positive surprise and letdown, so I just didn't include him, Wesco. Because I kind of was like, part of me wanted to do the optimism in me where it's like, hey, look, he had that good game against Baltimore at fullback. He has played a little bit now. He does bring a little bit more as a receiver. I think this is a very friendly offense for him. I think he could be a guy. I'm not saying he should be Kyle Juszczyk. I think he could be a guy that actually might be, okay, he's our starting fullback. But at the same time, I could also see a scenario where he's just terrible and the Jets really can't get their 21 personnel going because they just don't have a good fullback. So much so that maybe they would even consider adding a fullback. So I didn't really know where to put him. I didn't have a strong enough take on him. And maybe when I don't have a strong enough take, I should just keep my mouth shut. But one that again, not backing this, I just floated it out there. Maybe CJ Mosley.
I knew it. I knew that was the one you're going to go with. How dare you?
And I don't, I'm not saying this. I'm just saying, but I am saying it. You know, anytime a player drastically drops weight like that, it always makes me kind of nervous. I mean, like the positive is that he's focused. So that's nice. And he's in good shape and it's a better body fit for this offense. But look, 2 years off of football, he's a lot smaller than he used to be. So he's going to be a, he's a different player. So he's not used to playing in that body. He may get smothered up and his run defense might not be as good. You know, he might not be able to be as strong in the trenches as he's used to be used to being. He's a good coverage linebacker. I wouldn't say he's a great coverage linebacker. He's older. It's a new scheme. He, you know, that's just a lot of, he's been a 3-4 inside linebacker his entire career. Now he's being asked to be a 4-3. I like him a lot. I think he's a great leader. I think I'm excited to see him in the system. And I do believe in him. If you had to ask me, I'm going to say he does have a good season, but same time, that is a potential letdown season right there. The expectations are so high and I don't think people are being lenient enough to, he's 2 years off of football. You know, massive weight difference, completely different scheme. And also we don't know how those injuries affect him long-term. I think 2 years away, his body should be healed, but there's some injuries where guys just don't come back from. So not trying to put that negativity in the air, but if you had to ask me for a bold one, that would be my pick. I think
We are trying to do that. That's the point of this.
We're trying to be negative here, but I think Corey Davis is such a good scheme fit that he may not be as flashy as some other receivers, but I think he's going to be a very valuable piece of this offense. So I don't agree with yours, but I know that wasn't your full take. All right, starting kick returner and punt returner. Only a few more here.
Kick returner, I'm going to go with Vincent Smith. I think he'll make it as the seventh receiver on the roster and take on that role. I like what he did in 2019. When he played it, you mentioned Wesco in the Baltimore game. That was also a huge special team showcase that game. The kick returning was great. They had a blocked punt. The punt returning was great. So Jets did a lot of nice stuff in that game, even though they got blown out. So I'll go with Vincent Smith as a kickoff returner. And I think Braxton Berrios will keep his role as a punt returner. One interesting thing from when I was there at practice, they had four guys rotating at punt returner. It was Berrios, Elijah Moore, Michael Carter, and Keelan Cole. So, you know, just something to keep an eye on. Those guys are also in that mix. Moore actually was the only guy to muff a punt. He had one go off his face mask, and he got on himself for it. He's like smacking his helmet, yelling at himself. But I think Berrios will keep that role. He's done a nice job in it.
I actually completely agree with you here. I think Vincent Smith has a chance. It's between the two Smiths. I do think the Jets actually do keep seven receivers. I think Berrios makes the roster as the sixth receiver, punt returner, slot guy. And then I think the Jets do keep a guy who, I mean, it depends on the rest of the roster. You could use Berrios in more of the gadget role, but I think Vincent Smith has been playing well. He certainly has game-breaking speed. He's been working his way up the depth chart. Jeff Smith is another guy, but I think Vincent Smith sticks on the roster, and then he does return kicks for this team. All right, backup quarterback, Josh Johnson, James Morgan, Mike White, or other?
I'm going to go with James Morgan. I think that Joe Douglas is the guy. I think it'll be – this is a tough one because if Morgan and Johnson both make the roster, I feel like Johnson would be your backup, not your QB3. That would kind of, you know, be slightly pointless. Man, this is tough. I think Morgan will be the backup. White will make the practice squad. Johnson cut.
I don't think it's going to be Morgan. I do think it's going to be veteran. I'm just deciding if it's going to be Johnson or other. I think Johnson, I'm tempted because I think there are going to be some better veterans that are going to slip through, but sounds like he's a high character guy. He knows the system. He'll have had a whole training camp here. He kind of strikes me as a guy who might have an okay training camp here. I'll stick with Johnson. I think the QB room is Zach Wilson, Josh Johnson, and James Morgan. But look, Josh Johnson's one bad preseason game away from being a cut at the 53. So I can very easily see it with, like what you're saying. I kind of think they keep a veteran in the room just because that room, especially coaching and personnel wise, is so young that, and like you mentioned, Josh Johnson's been in the league forever now. So I think they keep Johnson around. All right. Over under 4.5 games where the Jets run more times than they pass.
Well, while we were going
maybe,
over
yeah, maybe
numbers,
provide some context here.
Yeah. So before we started recording, we looked into this. So the 49ers over the last 4 years with LaFleur and Shanahan had 20 games where they had more rush attempts than pass attempts, which is 5 per season. And the majority of those, 10 of them, were in the 2019 season. So obviously that correlates a lot with, you know, if you're playing well and you're ahead, you're going to run the ball more. So this is largely dependent on how good the Jets are.
What about the Jets last 4 years? I think that's important as well.
And the Jets the last 4 years had 16, so 4 per year, only 2 last year. So and of those 4 years, I believe 2019 they had the most, I think 6 of them. So it's definitely something that depends a lot on your overall team success, but it also is a sign of your philosophy and how you want to play offensively, a little bit of both. So I think the Jets will be a fairly run heavy team this year, not like the Ravens or the Titans or even the Niners a couple years ago or to that extent, but I think they will lean to the run game. So we set a good number here that I think it'll be right around there. I'm going to go with 4. So I guess I'll say under the 4.5.
Yeah. It's tough because there's a few factors here. You have a rookie quarterback, and because that, we know the Jets can run the football. I think the strength of their offensive line is going to be running the football. If Zach Wilson were to get hurt, they're going to run the football a hell of a lot more. But you notice that they did it 10 times in 2019. And that's because they were beating everybody. It's because they play good defense. They were up a lot, and they just got to control the football and run it. And I think the Jets aren't going to be in that situation too many times this season. I think that they will win games they shouldn't and lose games they should. Or lose games they shouldn't, right? Yeah, did it right. I'm stuck here. I agree with you. I kind of think it is 4. I also think that as the season goes on, because even though they have a rookie quarterback, I actually do think that Zach Wilson is a hell of a lot more talented than Jimmy Garoppolo. So as the season goes on, I have 2 points to make here. As the season goes on, I do think that they will want to play around with Wilson's arm talent more. And I think that if he catches a groove, which I think he will, at the very least, I think Wilson will hit a groove at some point in his rookie season, even if it's only for a few games. I think that they're going to pass the ball a lot. And I think that they'll be behind a lot. So I think they go 4. But something else to keep in mind, 17 games a season. So it was an extra game, an extra opportunity for the Jets to run more than they pass. Not that that matters too much, but it's an extra game in the winter, cold weather games, an extra game into January. You know, they have that game against Tampa Bay. And who did they close the season against? Why am I spacing here? Buffalo?
Yeah.
In Buffalo. So that's 2 cold weather games there. So they're going to run the ball there. So it's close. It's 4-5 to me. Over under 2.5 games where Zach Wilson, as a rookie, throws for more than 300 yards. And like the last one, maybe provide some context for our listeners.
So this is a pretty good one. The 2.5 is another good benchmark. So Jimmy Garoppolo did this 5 times in his 49ers career. And then for comparison with the Jets, Sam Darnold did it 4 times in his 3 years as a Jet. So it is something that is, you know, it's a fairly difficult thing to do. A lot of quarterbacks make it look easy now, but for a young quarterback and a quarterback in this offense, it's definitely something that is a fairly good accomplishment. So if he can do it frequently, that would definitely be impressive. So I think 3. I think he can do 3 this year, especially with the 17th game, giving him one more shot, which you mentioned. That's a good point. The fact that in anything you're talking about that has to do with totals, the 17th game is definitely going to help it out a little bit. So I think he'll have 300. Darnold had 2 as a rookie against the Packers and the Dolphins, and he missed 3 games. So I think Wilson can get 3. So I'll go over.
Yeah, I'm gonna go 3 as well. I think that it's close. Like the last one, I think we did a good job setting the totals. But I think the 17th game helps him out. And I do think Zach has a few, I think Zach has a more impressive rookie season than Darnold. Not just because I like him more as a prospect, but also I think he's just in a better situation. And the flip side of the last question is I think the Jets are going to be down a lot, so they're going to have to throw the ball. You know, the one time that Darnold did it as a rookie, or I think he did it twice, or he did it in the Packers game, but that game went to overtime and whatnot. But the other time was against the Dolphins where they were down 20-0 at halftime, so he had to throw a lot. So I think Zach could be in that position a few times this season, so I'll give him three. Last one. This one is the one we always do, and it's a bit stupid because none of us are in the locker room, but why not? Team captains this season, Michael. Two offensive, two defensive, one special teams. Who are your five?
Well, I guess he could retain the two from last season who are still on the team. So George Fant, last year's offensive captains to open the season were Sam Darnold, George Fant, Steve McClendon, Marcus May, and Matthias Farley. So two offense, two defense, one special teams. So I guess we'll stick. It would be the smart prediction to stick with Fant and May. I mean, you could switch it up if you want. I'll go with that. But I guess going with George Fant on offense. Wow, how about Greg Van Roten? I mean that would be two offensive linemen. So that might be. I mean, Greg Van Roten does seem like a good pick.
You know, I've got some good ones if you really want to get into it.
Defensively though, C.J. Mosley has to be there, and I think Justin Hardy's the special teams. So I feel pretty good about those four: May, Fant, Hardy, and C.J. Mosley. Trying to figure out that second offensive one though. Maybe Jameson Crowder. You can go ahead though.
All right, here you go. I'm going to shock you. I'll start with the three. Where are you two defensive again? Sorry, May and Mosley.
Yeah.
Okay, so we agree on defensively and special teams. I'm going to blow your mind here. One, I don't think George Fant retains his captain status. Maybe he does, but I think they're going to go with Morgan Moses, who's been in the league a long time. Okay. I think he makes a lot of sense as a guy who can come in. And, you know, part of the reason the Jets brought him in was because they felt he was a really high-character guy, long-term vet. I was struggling with that one as well. That was the one that took me a while. I did think about Crowder. I thought about Corey Davis. I thought maybe they give it to their rookie quarterback. I thought about maybe Tevin Coleman. He's been in the league forever. He's been in this offense forever. Went all over the place, but I settled on Morgan Moses as kind of like a nice veteran leader for this team. And you want the other one?
Go ahead. I'm ready.
Elijah Moore.
Okay. Okay. That crossed my mind.
Because I think it's a team. The team votes for it. I think that everything that everybody keeps saying is not only is he impressing on the field, but he's impressing off the field, especially with his mindset. Everybody keeps talking about how he has an impeccable mindset of just wanting to be the best and really, you know, not making the same mistake twice. I just think that he's captain material. And the only reason you wouldn't do it is because you don't want to have a rookie captain. And maybe people will read into that he's a captain and Wilson isn't. So there's the politics there. So maybe make Moore and Wilson both captains. Who knows? I could see that as well. But I think Elijah Moore, certainly 1 week into training camp, look at us two people who aren't in the locker room predicting captains. But I think from an outsider's perspective, those four, five make sense to me. I thought about putting Wilson in there instead of Moses, but four out of those five, I'm actually very confident in. So we'll see. I think that's good for us. We had a big, long episode today, Michael. You know, before this, we were like, what the hell are we going to talk about? And Michael, we just squeezed out almost an hour and a half of content right there. So that's next level galaxy brain thinking right there. So I just hope you're proud of it.
That's impressive. I'm very proud. We did a good job.
We lost all of our listeners at the 11 minute mark, but for the three people, no, I'm just kidding. Thank you everybody for listening. All right. We do really appreciate
to my mom. Thank you for listening,
Cade. We really do appreciate everybody who does listen. Our listens have continue to grow as we've been more consistent. And so we appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. If you'd like to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, it's always appreciated. Helps out the podcast tremendously. You can follow myself at CYJ Pod on Twitter, Michael at Michael_Nania, myself at Ben W. Blessington. Go to Jets
W. Bus.
Yeah, it's 10-12 my time, 1-12 your time. So we're both tired here. Go to jetsxfactor.com for the best Jets content out there. I think that's going to do it for us. Everybody have a great week. Everybody who's going to the green and white scrimmage, enjoy it this Saturday. Let's hope, knock on wood, if it's around you, for no injuries. Just hoping to continue that streak. We'll be back on Monday. special episode there. And then a week from today, this coming out on Thursday, we'll have our first game preview of the season. During the season, our Thursday pods are going to be game previews. Mondays will be recaps and talking about the rest of the stuff. But a week from now, we'll have a game preview, Michael. How exciting is that? So everybody stay tuned. Go Jets. Have a great weekend.